Do you remember when candidate Trump announced on the campaign trail over and over again a decade ago that NATO was obsolete? I bet if you're one of those deluded MAGA followers who truly believe Trump was the anti-war candidate, you do remember that gigantic fix of hopium straight into your veins. Yes, finally, here's a candidate who's going to stick it to the man and get rid of NATO and drain the swamp, etc. But if you were such a deluded follower whose hopium fix has long since worn off, I wonder, do you remember why Trump said that NATO was obsolete?
And by the way, I'm right about NATO. We have NATO, and we're giving countries a free ride. We are really, NATO is obsolete, it's old, it's fat, it's sloppy, and we are giving, and it doesn't talk about terrorism.
You know, I haven't been big into NATO, but we also have instincts, and we also have common sense, and I have, you know, studied it over the years and certainly read a lot about it. And I said, it's obsolete. And it is. It's obsolete. It's 68 years old. It was done at a different time. It was done at a time when you had the Soviet Union, which was different than Russia. It was bigger than Russia. And Russia's plenty of problem, but the Soviet Union was a bigger problem. And it was done before terrorism as we know it today.
But he asked me about NATO. I said, it's obsolete. This is my first day. And you know what? I'm the first one. Guys that study NATO, and good people, but they study NATO, and they say, I don't believe it. What he just said, I never thought of that. They study it because they're so into it that they don't realize. Because it was really put there, you had the Soviet Union, and now you have Russia, which is different, but Russia is very powerful, so we can sort of say that's a balance, so we'll leave it. But it doesn't really cover terrorism like it's supposed to. It doesn't have the right countries. I mean, many of the countries in there aren't, you know, that you associate with terrorism.
This includes working with our greatest ally in the region, the State of Israel. Recently, I have said that NATO was obsolete because it did not properly cover terror, and also that many of the member countries were not paying their fair share. As usual, the United States has been picking up the cost. Shortly thereafter, it was announced that NATO will be setting up a new program in order to combat terrorism, a true step in the right direction.
Oh, that's right. Terror, terror, terror. The terrorist boogeymen are coming to get you. Did I mention terrorism? NATO isn't doing enough about the real war, the war on terror, for our good friends and allies in the region. Israel. Yay! Yes, that's the hope and change that candidate Trump was promising for those who weren't paying attention beyond the headlines. Trump says NATO is obsolete? Great, he's the peace candidate. No, he was not. But he was floating an idea that has definitely become part of the globalist game plan, and that is the obsolescence of NATO, the planned obsolescence, almost like a controlled demolition, which has its uses in the pantheon of false flag operations, as people in the corporate report audience might be well situated to understand. So let's get a handle on this increasing obsolescence of NATO and the way that it is playing out in the newswires and in an obvious way. So for example, let's take a look at NATO itself and the types of declarations that it likes to issue after its glad-handing conferences that it has every year, where, of course, we have the annual NATO summit where all the NATO defense ministers and leaders come together to at least mouth platitudes about the importance of the NATO alliance in maintaining the structure of peace in Europe and the North Atlantic and all the rest of the world and all of that nonsense. And, of course, after each summit, they issue a joint communique. And you can sort of find the tenor of the track of NATO's trajectory by looking at these statements from the past few years. For example, way back in 2023, those heady days of Biden-era NATO optimism, we had this communique after the Vilnius summit, which was a fairly substantial document. Now, of course, this is just that mealy-mouthed political platitude about how important NATO is and all of that, but also some very specific points in here about Russia, about energy security, about space, etc., the next frontier of the NATO alliance. And then by 2024, that's pared down considerably. Suddenly we have, well, again, it's still a fairly substantial document, but less substantial, only about 38 points in that document. But by the 2025 Hague summit, last year's summit, the declaration was literally five paragraphs long. And the first paragraph is just mealy-mouthed platitude about how important NATO is. The second is about the allies committing to invest 5% of GDP on core defense requirements. The third is also about that exact same point, allies agreeing a 5% spending goal. And then the fourth, shared commitment to rapidly expand transatlantic defense, da-da-da. And then fifth is just thanking the Netherlands for hosting their summit. So literally, that is the entirety of the communique from last year. Yeah, NATO is an alliance that's doing precisely nothing. And it isn't even putting out big vision statements or big political documents that that all obviously usually amount to nothing. But at any rate, they at least take the time to put out some substantial statement. Well, not anymore, because NATO is on its way out. And another example of that we can find from our good friends at the CSIS, the Center for Security and International whatever, the globalist stink tank, which has been infesting these NATO waters for decades now and writing about international events from the globalist perspective. And even they are talking about NATO's brain death in The Hague from last year's summit, in which they talk about how Europe can no longer take the U.S. commitment, security commitment to NATO, that is, for granted, and how the problem with the spending target that they're setting that they set at The Hague is that it distracts from the harder and more urgent task of reforming and integrating European defense efforts. Europeans are simply unable to fight without the United States. Fixing this will require deep structural changes. Did somebody say deep structural changes? Because that's the kind of thing that the conspirators love to talk about right before they commit an act of controlled demolition. And if your spidey senses are tingling, then congratulations, you have good spidey senses. Perhaps you're just well informed by years of watching the Corbett Report. Like fellow Corbettier Roy, who wrote in with the question for today's edition of Questions for Corbett. Specifically, Roy writes, in your view, is the U.S. out of NATO threat just a problem reaction solution for we need a EU army? Okay, thank you for the question, Roy. And to put that in terms that hopefully an even broader swath of the audience will be able to understand, yes, the U.S. out of NATO threat that Trump has been implicitly and or explicitly making for a decade now, or at the very least, the Europe has got to step up and start pulling its fair share in NATO, at least that portion of the threat, is, as Roy, I think, perceptively highlights in his question, a problem-reaction solution, as in the problem is the EU is basically defenseless by itself. It needs all this U.S. support, and the U.S. can't afford to be the policeman of the world anymore. So the EU is going to have to do something. Reaction, oh my God, we need somebody to step out of the play. What is going to happen? Solution, EU army? Question mark. Now that's an idea that would have been, should have sounded outlandish to most European ears even a decade ago, even a few years ago. But in today's current climate, yeah, actually, that's exactly what is now on the table.
A European army. Interesting thought, but is this possible? Normally, this is where we'd say, no, not a chance, not anytime soon. But honestly, over the last year, global politics has moved so fast that the impossible of a European army has started to feel a lot more like maybe.
The bottom line is simple. Europe must be responsible for its own security. This is not longer an option. This is a must.
Our critical infrastructure needs more protection. The fast movement of Europe's militaries is essential for European defence.
The comments that garnered the most attention were made by the EU's Defence Commissioner, who argued that the bloc should instead create a European military force of 100,000 troops, essentially an EU army.
And for us, Europeans, it means that we must very rapidly build our independence. Independence in defence, without delays and without excuses.
Yes, it seems everybody is talking about the rise of at least the possibility of some form of EU army these days, including people who are high up in the bureaucracy, the Eurocrats who deign to rule over all of the citizens of the European Union, are now openly talking about their quest for achieving defense security independence from the United States, exactly in line with this idea that has been fostered now for the past decade. NATO is failing and obsolete. The US has to withdraw. Europe is on its own. So Europe better get its act together and start consolidating an EU army. And here we are. But of course, it didn't all happen at once. And it's, although a lot of people are talking about it right now in the context of all the craziness happening in the world right now, this is not a new idea. It's been around for some time, quite demonstrably. And I've been talking about it for over a decade now. For example, do you remember interview 1324, that edition of New World Next Week from November of 2017, where I was covering, along with James M. Bellotto of MediaMonarchy.com, EU signs defense pact in decades-long quest, which notes that France and Germany edged toward achieving a 70-year-old ambition to integrate European defenses on Monday, signing a pact with 21 other EU governments to fund, develop, and deploy armed forces after Britain's decision to quit the bloc. A couple of interesting takeaways from that. One is Reuters' tacit admission that the EU essentially is France and Germany, and the other 21 EU governments are just along for the ride, which seems about right. Also, the interesting tag there that this happened after Brexit, because it was, as you might recall, that heady summer of Brexit was also the summer of campaign candidate Trump talking about the NATO obsolescence, and those factors converged and drew us, perhaps inevitably, closer and closer towards this idea of the achieving of the 70-year-old ambition to integrate European defenses into a singular European army. And where does that ambition come from, and who was behind that? More on that in a moment. But let's look at what this really means for the future of the EU, and really for the future of regional / global government altogether. Again, I've been talking about this for a long time. June of 2016, I had this editorial up, EU Unmasked. After Brexit, plans for full EU superstate revealed. That's right. The graphite was hardly dry on the Brexit ballots when TVP Info, a Polish broadcaster, leaked a 9-page document drawn up by the German and French foreign ministers calling for an EU superstate, complete with an EU army, integrated border controls, and common taxation. The document, bearing the Orwellian title of A Strong Europe in a World of Uncertainties, lays out the exact tyrannical plans that the EU's critics have been warning about for years. For example, number one, first and foremost, a European security compact, including an expansion of internal security through a strengthened Europol and expansion of external security in areas like North Africa and the Middle East through coordination with the African Union, G5, and other globalist counterparts. As well as, of course, coordinated migration policy and economic and monetary union. But the meat and potatoes comes from this quote, which talks about how the EU should be able to plan and conduct civil and military operations with the support of a permanent civil military chain of command. Member states should be willing to establish permanent structured cooperation in the field of defense. And if needed, those states should consider establishing standing maritime forces. So yeah, the creation of an EU army has been on the table for at least a decade now. And as I conclude this editorial, you see the 3D chess players of the New World Order are smashing the chessboard right now. This is the only way for them to achieve their goals in the long run. But in order to do this, they have to let their masks slip. The EU is acting like the would-be world empire, or would-be empire that it is. So that leads to one of two conclusions. The globalists are dumb enough to believe that they can consolidate their power now and actually achieve the EU superstate, or they're deliberately setting the EU up for the inevitable populist backlash and the chaos, and then coming along in the wake of that chaos to pick up the pieces and put them together in the form of a strengthened EU superstate. Well, anyway, as I say here, feel free to speculate in the comments below, but that, I think, presents the options and presents the strategy of what is being done here. Why would the globalists, who obviously have greatly benefited from NATO as being the enforcer arm of the globalist wing of the Anglo-American Zionist faction, why would they abandon that structure at this point? Well, it's because now they can move on to the next stage of development, which is to withdraw America from its entangling NATO alliances in order to consolidate the North American technate, which we have talked about here on the podcast in recent times. You might want to see my recent podcast on what is Greenland really about for more on that idea. And as US withdraws into its Donroe Doctrine hemispheric aspirations, that leaves the EU to consolidate more power in the hands of Brussels for the benefit of the European clique of the globalists. Of course, they are all acting together to form the creation of the regional bloc governmental system that will be the de facto world global government of the future, not a singular parliament that meets in one singular location to make one singular agenda through one singular legislature. No, it will be a bloc system of competing blocs. Eurasia, East Asia, and Oceania will always be at war in some combination, and you'd be crazy for ever questioning it. And so we're starting to see the formation of the EU army side of this. But of course, it does raise the question of what the EU really is. Where did it really come from? What is the point of the construction of this EU superstate? Who were the types of characters that were championing this idea in the first place in the wake of World War II? And if you need more information on that, you can find more information in my presentation on why we must oppose Bilderberg. And of course, what did we get from the very foundation, the very inception of the Bilderberg Group? We got the idea that the group was working towards, well, world domination, ultimately, but a very specific type of world domination. This isn't just the crazy ideas of some crazy scientist with a big map in his drawing room, as we would be led to believe by Hollywood caricatures. This is actually a very detailed and very insidious plan that involved the merging of political, economic, and social institutions across the Atlantic through the transatlantic partnerships that were being formed during this period into a fascistic corporate governmental structure. And we can get glimpses of this from the documentary record that exists of the early Bilderberg meetings, including snippets of audio recordings that have finally come to light of the very first Bilderberg meeting in Oosterbeek, the Netherlands, at the Bilderberg Hotel in 1954, including a very interesting presentation delivered by Gardner Cowles, an American attendee of the first Bilderberg conference, who talked a little bit about the notion of a shared foreign policy across the Atlantic.
I think I should say frankly that we in the United States feel a sense of insecurity for perhaps the first time in our history. We're deeply disturbed that there seems to be no unity among our European friends with us in the question of what should be done in Asia.
This raises the question, of course, of a unified foreign policy for the Atlantic nations to underlie that NATO military pact that had just been signed a few years earlier, as we talked about. And it also harkens back to the CFR's War and Peace Studies Group's recommendation for exactly this type of body that that the Bilderberg was to become, which is a body for an institution or a grouping for people to talk people in positions of power and influence to talk about these transatlantic alliances and how it can be shaped into a coherent foreign policy. Well, just a decade after the CFR's War and Peace Studies Group was proposing it, here is people like Gardner Cowles and Prince Bernard and Joseph Redinger and many, many others sitting there discussing exactly that, how they can more closely meld the foreign policy aims and objectives of the Atlantic nations, including, of course, the United States and Canada and all of the European nations who are convening at Bilderberg, or more accurately, the would-be ruling oligarchs, the powers that shouldn't be, over top of those nations. So it was that in 1955, the Bilderbergers met twice, in fact, and the third ever Bilderberg meeting occurred in September of 1955, the second taking place earlier in the year. And the third meeting was, the meeting minutes have since been leaked. They are available online, and of course, I'll link to them at CorbettReport.com so that you can actually find them and read them for yourself. But there are some pretty interesting snippets from those leaked documents, including the fact that the Bilderbergers were talking quite frankly about the, quote, pressing need to bring the German people, together with the other peoples of Europe, into a common market, end quote, which is, again, perhaps particularly significant in the context of that Nazi Red House meeting that we talked about earlier in Strasbourg in 1944, where they talked about how the fact that the German people, amongst the other peoples of Europe, would only be able to bring about that Fourth Reich, that political power structure that was envisioned as the replacement for the Third Reich through a European common market. Well, what were remarkably similar languages being used here? And then, of course, the leaked documents also reveal, quote, a plan to arrive in the shortest possible time at the highest degree of integration, beginning with a common European market. That sounds like a pretty concise and coordinated and very well thought out agenda. And wouldn't you know it, lo and behold, just 2 years after that conference, there they are at the Treaty of Rome, signing the very documents that would become the foundation for the European Union. Wow, who would have thunk it? And just to put the icing on the cake, and just to make sure that we understand who is really behind this initiative, of course, we should understand that many of the signers of the Treaty of Rome, including Paul Henri de Spaak, I believe was his name, was a Bilderberg attendee. So again, we have the actual Bilderberg attendees proposing the formation of a European common market as the stepping stone towards the highest degree of integration possible across Europe. And then 2 years later, they're the ones sitting around the table signing the documents to make it all official. Now, the bigger context of that story and what Bilderberg was aiming at and the types of people behind it are obviously contained in that full report on why we must oppose Bilderberg. It's also, of course, been adapted into one of the essays in Reportage Essays on the New World Order. So I will invite you to explore that topic in greater detail at your leisure. But yes, long story short, the European Union Army is the ultimate fulfillment of that dream of the quest for consolidation of control of Europe, the continent of Europe, in the hands of a few oligarchs. What could be a better proof of such a consolidation than the formation of a single army? And so we have seen, of course, this idea being proposed, as Reuters noted there, for 70 years now, but it is finally coming to fruition with various agreements that have been signed and various roadmaps that have been put in place, like this one that the European Union Commission dropped last November on the Readiness Roadmap 2030, which is a white paper for European defense that outlines key proposals for various flagship projects, the Eastern Flank Watch, the European Drone Defense Initiative, the European Air Shield, and the European Space Shield. And also, it goes through milestones that can be set on the path towards this creation of a European defense. For example, the Commission establishes tech alliances for defense, connecting tech innovators with defense users, which is just some of that glorious Orwellian language. Defense users. Anyway, the tech innovators that they're talking about here are, of course, the tech bros, and what they are really referring to is the complete changeover in the face of the defense industry that I've had cause to talk about for some time now. The Anduril's and the Palantir's and the other providers of nifty AI gadgetry and drone warfare supplanting the old Lockheed Martins and Boeings and Northrop Grumman's. That's your granddaddy's defense establishment. Now it's all these cool tech bros with their, tech innovators supplying these technological defense capabilities to defense users. It talks about expanding the strategic dialogue with industry in the first half of 2026 and hosting the first annual Defense Industrial Summit by mid-2026. Hey, coming right up. And what are they talking about here? Explicitly, this is fascism in the sense of corporatism, in the sense of member states of the European Union actively colluding to conspire with industry itself, to directly involve itself in the process of course, getting industry on board with this new defense sector alignment. And in that regard, hey, how about reskilling 200,000 employees for the defense industry by 2026? Reskilling, yes, indeed. What does that mean? Oh, you've been laid off. Oh, you've been replaced by some AI bot drone. Oh, don't worry, guys. We have a job for you, helping in European industry kill people. Yay! And they go through more indicators and milestones and other such things. And you can even read the joint communique that was released as part of this roadmap, where it talks about the virtues of creating a sovereign defense for Europe, etc., and how that's going to foster peace through deterrence, etc. Where have I heard that phrase before? And you can read the readiness roadmap itself. But I think that gives you a flavor of what is being prepared right now and sets the background for the pronouncements of such people as European Defense Commissioner, or whatever he's going by right now, the EU Defense and Space Commissioner, Andrius Kubilius, who earlier this year, yes, talked about and promoted the creation of a 100,000-man strong EU army.
If the Americans will shift from Europe, how do we create an European pillar of NATO? Who will be the European secure? What's about European command and control capabilities? European headquarters? Most importantly, how we will replace, in that case, the 100,000 strong American standing military force, which is the backbone military force in Europe? Who will form our European standing backbone military force? Germans? A collection of 27 bonsai armies? Armies that look nice, but are cut down, shrunk, clipped? Or as Jean-Claude Juncker, Emmanuel Macron, Angela Merkel already proposed 10 years ago, and are supported today by experts and Europeans, the creation of powerful standing European military force of 100,000 troops?
Oh, goody, a 100,000 strong EU army in the hands of Brussels. What could go right? Yes, we have seen the development of this idea over the course of the better part of a century, but really coming to closer and closer to fruition over the course of the past decade through a series of commitments and statements, etc. And of course, Trump played his role of the bull in the China shop, wrecking everything so that it could be recreated from the ground up. And now, get rid of NATO. Well, NATO can still exist as a rump organization that can be used to invoke, for example, Article 5, like they did after 9/11. If you don't know about that, you should see my previous reporting on the subject and what the lie that sold the Afghan war, because that's a hell of a story in and of itself. But obviously, Article 5 is a great trigger that they can keep around just in case they ever need to pull off a false flag in some whatever, some outward province of Turkey, and blame it on whoever is the demon of the day and say, that's the reason we had to go in and invade them. So NATO still has its uses. They're not probably going to scrap it altogether. But all of this talk of the obsolescence of NATO is the problem. The reaction is, oh my God, how is the European Union going to defend itself from big bad Russia? And the solution is the EU army. So thank you, Roy, for the very perceptive question. Is this a problem reaction solution in order to create an EU army? I think all signs point to yes, that is correct. So there are a lot of cookie crumbs along this trail that you can put together to form this picture. And as a result, there will be a lot of links in the show notes for today's episode. I invite you to go explore them at your leisure at corbettreport.com/EU army. That being said, I think we're going to leave this exploration here for today, although there will be more to say about this topic in the future, I imagine. We'll leave this here for today. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, thanking you for investing your time in today's exploration and inviting you to join me again in the near future.
The deep state. False flags. 9/11 truth. The Federal Reserve. Secret wars and hidden histories. Fake news. Medical martial law. Ceaseless propaganda. James Corbett. Reportage. Essays on the New World Order. Available where books are sold. Until they're not.
ReportageBook.com.